All right, welcome back, music makers, to episode 50 of Make More Music. My name's Chris. I'm a board-certified music therapist, and if you're new here, welcome. I've got a great interview today with Pieng Threadgill, a great vocalist, voice teacher, just really great person. And we kind of like the Daniel Donato episode, we go into a little bit about like what is music and why do we do it and the state of things. But really great chat. I'm just grateful here. We're here at 50. I've been playing some gigs. Like I told you, we had a couple wrap up recently. They went great. So I just thank everybody that's listening, all the new people that have hopped on. People loved the last episode. We got an ad spot later with Chase Bliss, and I'm just so grateful. I can't believe I'm here at 50. At the beginning, I would have told you that, like, duh, I would have thought I would have gotten here, but at about 30, it starts getting really hard. So I'm just really grateful. And I'm just glad you're here and glad you're listening. And I just don't even have any words to say. I just feel like it's an Oscar acceptance speech and they're going to start playing the music and kick me out. But here's a great chat. We'll celebrate bigger at the end of the season. But for now, enjoy this chat with Pieng Threadgill on Make More Music, episode 50. All right, here we go. Season 3 of Make More Music is brought to you by three great sponsors, and I wanted to tell you about them real quick. So I built a guitar, and it is awesome. I have a companion blog post in the show notes that tells you about building a parts caster from concept to creation, and it tells you about the three great sponsors I got to work with. First is Partscaster Concierge. Gary offers a truly concierge experience from build constructions and consultations to unfinished bodies and wooden pedal enclosures all the way to custom requests and fully custom builds. He offers traditional styles as well as unique one-of-a-kind DIY experiences with guitars that wouldn't traditionally have a bolt-on neck with a Partscaster style build. Second is Porter Pickups. Brian and his team have been winding pickups focused on finding you the right sound and winding with a purpose. Their five-person shop offers consultation through their online pickup chooser form to help you get closer to the sounds you're looking for. They sound killer. They just launched an entry-level affordable line called the Gatekeeper, so if you're looking for something to try for the first time, look them up. Our last sponsor is Gun Street Wiring Shop, where they create wiring harnesses for your guitar needs with simple, elegant instructions to help even the first-time solderer like myself get the sound they're looking for. He's not into promoting parts myths, mojo, and magic. He sells circuits, and their customer service is top-notch. From basic upgrades to wild enhancements, Gun Street has got what you need. As I said, all the links are in the show notes, and you'll hear me blab about it more, but if you want more, look there. All right, back to the show. I am so glad you're here for the Make More Music podcast. We were just chatting about how it's almost spring where you are. What have you gotten into today?
Oh my gosh. You know, Thursdays are a pretty full teaching day for me. I teach voice privately and Alexander technique or mindful movement. So most of my day was teaching, and then I actually got out while it was still kind of warm and walked around. I live by Prospect Park, which is a big park here. Good. And got a nice little walk in before dinner. So that's kind of my day.
Awesome. And what does teaching look like for you right now? Is it all online? Is it some in person? Is it hybrid? Have you been able to do mostly in person or all in person? What's that look like right now for you?
Good question. It's actually been all online, and cool. It's all worked. And yeah. I'm so grateful. You know, it's like, I mean, I know, you know, I'm sure you know too, for so many musicians and artists, the pandemic has been so challenging. And fortunately, with teaching voice and even movement, the kind of authentic movement, intuitive movement that I teach, it works on, you know, virtually. And good. So right away, as we made that transition last year, I was able to just kind of move everybody online, and it's actually opened things up, to be honest.
Yeah. Because you're not limited to geography anymore.
Yeah.
So I do music therapy, and we have some clients even that like, hey, I'm traveling with my dad going to, you know, some other state, we can still do their session and stuff. They're in a different state. Like, just even if it's vacation and they just need, you know, if they have special needs and they need some normalcy or something, it's like, well, their routine's thrown off. So let's do one thing that's at least routine based.
Yes, exactly. I know. I feel like it's like, it has definitely made me really kind of have a hopeful eye towards some of the future in that way.
Correct.
You know, because I'm like, oh, this is great. Like, I can go away and leave town and I don't have to stop my practice. I can still teach my students and, you know, we can be out of town. And that feels really liberating.
Yeah, you know? Totally. Yeah. It'll be nice when all of these things are an option too.
I know, exactly. That's the thing, right? Yes.
Cool. Well, let's hop into these rapid fire real quick. There are short questions, but they don't have to be short answers.
Okay.
On your phone, your record player, whatever you were listening to last, what was the last track you listened to? You can pull out your phone if you need to.
I know, totally. I'm like, that's pretty hard. You know something? I think that the last person, because actually what's coming up right now is Laura Nero.
I don't know her.
She was like a singer-songwriter in the 70s. She died fairly young. And she has this album, Gonna Take a Miracle, where she's doing all these kind of like poppy, you know, soul covers. And LaBelle, the group LaBelle, is actually her backup. They're doing all the backups.
Okay.
It's an awesome, phenomenal album. And so, I didn't even realize that. That was the last thing I was listening to.
That's good. I have a hunch of the answer, but maybe, you know, sometimes it's wrong. You can take this as philosophically or, you know, whatever rabbit hole you want to go down. But if you were an instrument, what would you be and why?
Ooh. You know, I'll be honest, I don't know if you would think this. I actually think I would be drums.
Okay.
To be honest. And it's because I love drums. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's like drums or bass. But I think, you know, drums is probably it, because in a lot of ways, like the way that I write my own music, I'm very, I'm always leaning into rhythm. Like, also because of the movement, like the way that I kind of hear sound, I'm always sort of seeing movement. So it's very rhythmic based. A lot of what I write, even if the lines seem kind of simple, there's always like something kind of busy happening rhythmically underneath that. So I think in some ways I would be that. And I'm like a big Sheila E. lover. So I always like, you know, in my like other life, I play timbales and I'm like an amazing timbale player.
That's great. That's really great. Well, you always post really cool pictures of all kinds of mentors. So yeah.
Yes.
She's a good one. She's a good one.
She is a good one.
It doesn't have to be music related at all, but it's cool if it is. But what's something that's been inspiring you recently?
Wow. You know, to be honest, like really, really recently, two things. I'm actually doing a songwriting challenge with a more recent friend that I met in this community, a music community that I'm in. One of my students named Jen Shu, who's a multi-instrumentalist, composer, vocalist, has a Patreon, as many musicians are doing nowadays. And she has a Share Your Work salon. So that's been super inspiring to me. Years ago, I was in a singer-songwriter circle, and I just, like, it was such a great thing that Tom Paul, big shout out to Tom Paul, he started, and it was like every Monday evening, folks would just show up at his house, he'd make like a salad or a soup, and it would just go for hours.
Nice.
And that kind of community to me is so helpful, because I, you know, as artists, there's so much that we do alone, and I like my alone time, but I really feed off of feedback.
Nice.
And so having that, like, so these kind of artist circles where I can share work and see other people's work is just like light in the midst of this weird mm-hmm. time that we're in, you know, right now.
Yeah. And I think the same thing we were chatting about earlier too, is like, now we feel less limited to the people we want to work with.
Yeah.
Like, where otherwise we might have like put up with some people who are around us. We can really cultivate exactly what we want.
That's so true. I know. I mean, like, even, you know, I'm doing this songwriting challenge with this other woman, wonderful vocalist, composer, Noah Fort. And like, we're just, you know, we just were in this group and she mentioned that she was doing it like for 3 months. She just was with some other artists every day, try to write every day.
Nice.
For 3 months. And I, like, that's, it's kind of challenging, especially, you know, if you have kids. I have a daughter, you know what I mean? It's like, it's hard to do every day, but having that accountability, and it's just really,
and just bringing something, something to the table.
Yeah. Doing something, you know? So that's been really
good. Nashville style, getting after it.
Yes. Exactly.
That's good. What is a pro tip, a life hack, a personal practice that you use that you feel like everybody should know about? You're the advocate for this pro tip.
Ooh, that's a good.
And it can be simple. Doesn't have to be music related at all.
Something that everybody ought to use. Wow. I mean, I guess I would lean towards meditation, probably some form. And I would say some kind of meditation.
I mean,
I think that sitting, like, I've been doing sitting meditation for a lot of my life, but I'm also a big believer in movement meditation. And I kind of flip back and forth between the two. For me, music is a meditation as well in a lot of ways. But I think having some practice every day where you can get into more of a flow state.
Yeah.
Right. And so, like, walking, you know, like, is a movement meditation. Qigong or Tai Chi is movement meditation, yoga. And I also think playing an instrument is a kind of meditation. So I just think that we as human beings, the ways that our brains work, we really need that. Personally, I need that.
Have you seen that new Pixar movie Soul?
Yes.
I love how they demonstrated that idea.
Know.
They're like, oh, they're in flow. I was like, what a great, and I was like, that's a good illustration for like kids to understand that.
Totally. I love that. I know that was like on our list. We're like, we have to see Soul.
Oh man, so good. So good. Cool. Total 180. What's your go-to junk food?
It's not the worst. Well, I have two.
Okay. All right.
I love French fries, and like something that I was going hard on, and you would not think it for me because people are always like, Pine, you're so healthy. Like, all your posts are healthy food. Doritos.
Nice.
I was like,
it what's
was
your
like,
favorite Dorito flavor?
I'm like,
original?
Original. All yeah. Right.
And like, not 3D or nothing.
No,
crazy.
And not Cool Ranch. Like, I'm not, like, I mean, I'll eat them, you know, of course I'll eat them.
But
if I
let's
have
go
to.
For the real deal.
Original, you know?
All right. Nothing like some good Dorito fingers.
Exactly. Dorito fingers. It's like so terrible and so good. Like,
so good. There's
so
some
many,
kind of
like,
addictive thing that they
yes,
put in there for sure.
There's something in that powder.
Yeah. It's good though. Oh man. Lastly, you've already kind of shout out a few people already. So it doesn't have to be music related either, but who's a person or a project or an organization that you just think they're doing something cool and they deserve a shout out?
Oh man.
And I know there's tons. There's always
tons, right?
So just they don't have to feel bad. Just throw one out there.
There is an organization, and I don't want to botch the name right now. It's like Buy From a Black Woman, like Buy From a Black Woman's Business. I follow them on Instagram and I also follow them on email. And that's one of two projects that I'm really into and wanting to learn more about.
Very
cool. Supporting Black women's small businesses.
Very cool. Very cool. We've been thinking about that just like, simple practices that kind of shake up our life. One for us was Liberty Mink. I just heard about this, but he's the longest standing black financial executive in the nation. Wow. And it started in New Orleans. There's only there's only one branch in Kentucky, but luckily it's in Louisville.
Oh my gosh.
So, and it's just as simple as like, I mean, it's just a bank. Like it works like all the other banks. Like why not? And I just was really impressed by them. They do a lot about, they call it like missional loaning. So like basically the point is not like looking at a checklist and going, nope, you're off, but really trying to take like a holistic approach to that. So I just learned about them like a couple of days ago.
That's so cool. So, I love that. You must find out about so many great ones also with your podcast. Like that's,
I know it's all these things are for helping me. for a friend.
Exactly. Yeah, right. Yeah, totally. Yeah, totally. Yes.
That's good. So awesome. Well, take me back to when you're a kid, you know, what were some of the sonic things that were shaping you? Who were some of the musical influences? Who were some of the family or significant other influences on your earliest musical memories?
Oh, wow. Well, you know, it's funny because, well, both my parents are artists. So
cool.
A lot of my musical memory is just kind of like being in rehearsals, you know, so uh-huh. just hearing, being a little kid and music is just happening.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like not knowing the name of this song. It's just,
yeah.
And because my parents were both in like the downtown improvisation scene, music and dance scene.
Sweet.
A lot of it was really improvised music. So it really wasn't always like a through composed song.
Very cool.
So on the one hand, it was definitely my father, his first group was called Air. It was a trio of saxophone, drums and bass. So I heard a lot of that. And then my mom dancing. So that, and then also some of my friends that I grew up with are the kids of, and they're close friends, Gene Lee, who is a famous jazz singer and big in the creative improvisational world. So that was kind of like some of it. William Parker also is a bassist in that world, kind of grew up in that sort of downtown scene. But then in terms of like the music that I loved myself, I was always really into kind of early jazz and like crooner type singers. So like I love, and I still love, and I loved like Sam Cooke. I love Nat King Cole. Like I love that kind of voice.
Nice.
Billie Holiday. And so it always felt kind of funny to me, like, walking around the world and like on the one hand, you know, like maybe like Tribe Called Quest or like these different groups big, right? And I'm like listening to like Beastie Boys and like whatever.
Right? All the like 90s.
Right? You know what I mean? And then at the same time though, there's like in my heart of hearts, I was like, but I feel at home in like Sam Cooke's land. You know what I mean?
Nice.
Like, and when I, years ago, when I made it to New Orleans as an adult, I felt that way. Like, I was like,
what a pilgrimage.
Like, what have I been? This is where I'm from.
I've been there. I've been there twice. And literally, I was like, I could definitely live here.
Right.
I think my favorite thing was just like, you'd be walking around and kids in the park would pick up instruments and start playing. And I was like, no kids in my parks play a brass ensemble.
This
is so legit.
I know.
I really love the like old, even the like 20s and 30s New Orleans jazz.
Me too.
There's like, you know, seven different instruments playing things that seem disparate, but they all just like weave together.
Yes.
And that slippery clarinet.
Yes, like, exactly. Exactly. Me too. It's like, my heart just like opens up. I'm like, oh my God, I'm home, you know? So I think it's, in some ways as a kid, I kind of always felt a little bit like an old soul, you know, and also being a single child, like I'm an only child.
Yeah.
You know, I always felt like.
You're like having adult conversations.
I kind of felt like I was a little bit from a different time, you know,
For sure.
for sure. I had that thought when I was like, I was into a lot of like metal stuff in high school.
Yes.
And I was like, you know, if I swapped birthdays with my mom, I would have been so much cooler.
like yes,
at the time frame.
Totally.
I was like, all the stuff I like is like from the 80s.
And yes. Yeah, yes. So, that's hilarious.
That's funny. So it seems like you didn't really stand a chance, like music was going to hit you either way. So what instruments and things, when did you first remember like focusing effort on music and what were you picking up along the way?
Voice is always, singing and words have always been like my first instrument. And I started that at a really young age, like 3 or 4, I was making up songs.
Nice.
And putting them in my tape recorder and, you know, making up my radio station. You know how kids do,
yep,
right?
Yep.
And then the next instrument that I took piano lessons for a little while and wasn't able to keep them up. I think my parents maybe couldn't afford like them consistently.
Sure.
I always think that like I just didn't want to practice.
I mean, you're a kid.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, it was like, I really needed somebody to hold me to it. Cause I was like, meh. And then I moved to flute. My dad is a flautist and that was really his main instrument, like being a composer and a flautist. So, you know, I have half siblings. I said I'm an only child, but I have half siblings. And I feel like my sister also had to take flute. Like, I feel like he's tried to kind of get us.
You're at least going to give it a shot. He's like a football dad. Like, you're at least going to.
Exactly. And we all like give it up. But I really like flute. You know, I love like flute in Latin music. Like, I love that. But I stopped and I wound up just eventually coming back to piano. So I mainly write with my voice and piano.
Yeah,
kind of like my main instruments. Yeah.
Very cool. So was this also a thing that by, you know, like high school wrapping up, you knew this was a route you were taking, or what did that look like as you kind of went on the, whatever your journey was? I always think that's interesting if, you know, a kid interested in music to like, am I going to do this?
Yeah. I was performing and writing songs. And even recording in high school, I was in a band. We were called Soul Sauce, and I'm still friends with many
all
of
right.
those guys.
That's a good name. Any other good names to throw out there?
That's the main one. That was
I love old band names.
I know, me too. It's like
some of them are great, and some of them are like
terrible, and just so good, like so terribly good, right?
There's a threshold that at some point it becomes good again.
Exactly.
It's like a bad movie.
Totally. So in like junior high was when we started, and we started as a cover band, like maybe 7th or 8th grade. And we were covering, actually, I forget, we were first called Axis. Okay, there you go.
Because it's super important to change your name multiple times.
Exactly.
I know how that
keep
works.
Keep the members, change the name, you know.
Yeah, so maybe not practice, but you know, you're changing your, you're worried about your logo.
Exactly, that's exactly right. These are all the things. Yeah. So we were covering, you know, it was really formed by, there were several guitarists, a bassist, drummer. And so it was really like, headed by their music desires first, and they were really into Guns N' Roses and Jimi Hendrix, so we were doing those kinds of covers, and then we started moving into our own, and that I think that that's how we became Soul Sauce more and more. And in New York they have this thing called Battle of the Bands, you know, where like where you battle, and we won, and so we won whatever it was, $500 or whatever. And we used that money to go to the studio and record ourselves a demo. So this is like pre-Pro Tools, every kid can now do like on their phone in their bed. You know what I mean? We were actually like in
Billie
the studio.
Eilish.
Exactly. And that was, you know, I would say, I kind of from pretty young, always wanted that to be my focus. I wanted to be a singer, and I imagined and hoped that I would be a well-known, successful singer. And that definition has changed for me. Definitely, like what successful means and what famous means or whatever. But for sure, that was like I had hoped, you know. And I went to college. I went to Oberlin in Ohio, and I focused on music there. I was not a conservatory student, but I was a music major through the college.
Okay.
And that like gave me the flexibility to also take other classes. I took a lot of classes in African American studies, arts, you know.
Very cool.
How big
is the whole Oberlin school?
Is it still pretty small? It's still pretty small. It's, you know, it's that liberal arts kind of intimate type of vibe.
Like a bigger-ish high school, basically.
Yes, exactly. I loved it. I mean, you know, it had its challenges being in the conservatory because the focus there is primarily Western classical music.
And strict about it.
And that was not my... Not that I wasn't into it, but it just wasn't my jam. You know what I mean? When I got there, I found out that they didn't have a jazz voice teacher. I don't know if now they might have that. But at the time I was there, there was nobody to teach jazz voice or contemporary commercial music as like now departments are having. And my daughter, who's like now going to be applying to college, she's going to be a senior. She's looking at those programs and I'm like,
yeah,
my God, like if this had existed when I was younger, oh my God, you know,
I know,
be a different person, you know,
I know for sure.
Yeah,
for sure. Well, that's good. So, you have albums going back for quite a ways now. Yeah. So what has that trajectory? You mentioned, you kind of foreshadowed at that a little bit of, you know, I thought it was going to be this, but now from my side of the table, it definitely looks like you've got this, you know, holistic kind of life practice. It looks like you've got a good thing going on. You're staying busy with teaching and still making music and all of this stuff. So take me kind of through the steps of of deciding to even go on the route that you're going now.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know if it's similar for you at all, but when I was 26, I had my daughter and I released my first album.
Nice.
And I did it in the same month, which I wouldn't necessarily recommend. You know what I mean? But, you know, I didn't realize it at the time. One, youth is an amazing thing because, you know, we can do so much, right? We're like,
you don't even blink an eye. Yeah.
Totally. You can really deal with being sleep deprived pretty well. Oh, you know, it catches up with you, but it's like different than being, you know, I'm 43. So it's different than like how I feel now. But I would say that things started to really grow like exponentially in my career. And at the same time, I think even then things were starting to head in a direction that I didn't realize.
Nice.
So I released my album and I'm starting to get like write-ups and I'm getting press. And I got, you know, the opportunity to tour at this big blues festival in Cognac in France. And
very cool.
You know, like things started. And then the next year, I think I released my next album, which was all original music with two covers. And I get a booking agent and it's like, I'm touring more and I'm like, wow, you know, I perform Montreal Jazz Festival. I'm performing in Spain. Like, you know,
you're like, whoa, what is happening? Yeah,
exactly. However, at the same time, I have a child and I'm feeling
literally growing in front of you. Yeah.
And I'm feeling that it's hard to do the two, you know, plus I'm also going to school for Alexander Technique. And my husband's in grad school. So, you know,
youth.
Right. Like I would never put that many things on my plate.
It's like
now,
you must choose one now.
So I think a lot of, you know, and I say this a lot, that a lot of how I live my life now got determined by starting a family.
Mm-hmm.
And I've watched many musician friends. I was the first one out of like my friend circle to have a kid. So we were kind of like the first ones to like get
the
married.
Experiment.
And
like, yeah, exactly.
We were the experiment. And everybody was like, oh, they can do it. And we were like, it's kind of crazy though.
It looks different over here, I promise.
Exactly. So, you know, we were the first ones. And a couple years later, friends started getting married, started having children. But I've watched friends and artists try to go at it the same way that I did, where they're like, I'm going to just, doesn't matter. I don't need to sleep. I can like work just as much as I did, take all the gigs. And then they start to burn out. And it's like, I've watched all my friends try and then they just something like short circuits. And they're like, I can't do that because you just don't have the same bandwidth.
Hey, music makers. I interrupt this interview to briefly introduce to you the Chase Bliss Audio Mood, a two-channel granular microlooper and delay. This backing track you're hearing now features my guitar and the whimsical glitches you can get at your fingertips with the Mood. I recently partnered with Chase Bliss for teaching and introducing effects pedals to music therapists in my communities, mostly because I love their company culture, the products they make, and their approach to impacting all the different music communities they interact with. So if you haven't heard of them, you should go check out their stuff. You should listen to the recent episode with Joel Corti, the founder, episode 49, and check out their many other beautiful, awe-inspiring, creativity-expanding pedals at chasebliss.audio.com. All right, back to the show.
Years ago, I was seeing a therapist and we were talking about this and she was just kind of like, you know, I think you would have hit that wall anyway. And in a lot of ways, you know, your life is kind of like a saving grace because you had to slow down. Because like there was a thing in me, definitely being in New York is such a like go, go, go city. And you always feel like you're missing something and you got to put out a new whatever.
There's
like
50 cool things going on every night. Yeah,
exactly. And it's like, oh my God, like even though you just released an album, you should have another new project. You know what I mean?
Like Taylor Swift in it, dropping them like
totally,
every 2 months.
Totally. Yeah. And, but that's just really not, that's not fair to artists, right? Mm-hmm. Like we need recuperation time. That's also how we create, I believe.
Yeah.
And so I think I was, in my early 20s, I was just like braced to just be on go and just like search for gigs and just constantly be on email and search. And then having a family over time, I just had to like dial it back. And it was like, how am I going to be able to hold the role that I have of both these things, being a mom and a wife and being a performer? What do I need? What kinds of tools do I need so that I don't burn out in either one?
Sure.
And it required me to like have to recalibrate and redefine, like we're saying, like what my success looked like. Because sure, I could have been successful in music, but I felt like it would have taken a toll on my family and my relationships there.
Yeah.
And I didn't want that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If you don't care, then you know, which
there's
many
a price.
Musicians can choose. But I was like, I want both to feel good. And so that became kind of a new thread for me of like, what does it look like to be a sustainable artist?
Nice.
You know? Yeah.
So that sounds really awesome. But I'm sure it did not feel really awesome along the way. So like you mentioned, it's clearly a very personal task, a very personal journey. But for you, what were some of those gut checks? What were, some of those hard conversations, hard realizations and recalibrating that you had to go through that maybe, you know, somebody else that's hustling hard right now and listening to this, but starting to feel the burnout or maybe way past the burnout. What would you say for somebody like that?
That's a great question. You know, I started to say no to things, you know, and
it's super hard.
It's so hard. I mean, it's hard anyway, right? But I think as artists, we do tend to have it ingrained. I don't know. Right?
Say
that,
yes.
Like, this is it. This is the gig.
And a no could be, I just said no to 30 things, not just
totally.
I said no to one thing.
Like,
that's
you just said
problem.
No to your career.
Yeah.
You just said no to, like, I don't know, some big thing next year. You said no to like some other presenters. So it's really hard to trust your gut when it feels like this is too much. Mm-hmm. And I think artists often don't even have like a connection with their gut because they're just like, just say yes. They just like override. Because I've watched friends with kids just be like saying yes to stuff and they're like, like totally going crazy. And I did that too. And then at a certain point I was like, oh, if I feel like terrible, if I feel like really cranky,
maybe that's a signal.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
That's probably a sign that like I have to say no to this. And that was the hard stuff, like saying no for years to gig opportunities or projects, and also having to pull back my own solo project a lot. Like I had to kind of, because I just couldn't be the like band leader and like do all that work of like searching out, like throwing out, you cast out your line,
it's a lot.
Like let's see what comes back, and then doing the mom and doing the teaching. I was like,
good luck.
And so what was nice was I started to do more side woman gigs. So like I, you know, and that was like, okay, I can still perform, I'll perform less, but and I don't have to lead the thing. And that felt like something that really
it
worked.
It feels so good. I think I've always been the kind of person, and like I didn't pursue like professional performing, but everything I've done performing wise, every band I've been in and all those things, I've been like the leader of those things.
Yeah.
And I think, how did I even end up being the leader of this thing?
But it's
like when you can show up and be told what to do and like worry about your part and then just fitting in, like,
oh my God,
it's so
isn't it crazy?
Yeah.
And isn't it crazy when people are like, I mean, it was just like nice. I worked with a girlfriend of mine from college who's a dancer and choreographer and has a dance group in LA called Contratiempo, Against Time. And she, you know, hired me for a couple big pieces. And it was just so nice to be brought in to just like people, when people call you in and they're just like, just do you. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
You know, I mean, not even like, you know, like a cover thing and like imitate so-and-so, right? Or something.
Yeah.
But just like really do like your kind of niche thing that you do, Paing. And I'm like, that's so nice. And I don't have to create the rehearsal schedule and I don't have to figure out transportation and I don't have to give out the checks. Like, this is kind of good, you know?
For sure.
So that was really nice. You know, however, still in my heart of hearts, I think, you know, for some of us creating our like original songs, there's something about that that just tastes so good.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing that is that fulfills that craving. And so I do need that every so often.
It's good.
Yeah.
So let's transition a little bit to talk about, I've just like been looking at your stuff and looking at all the different types of classes and ways that you conceptualize teaching voice and movement. And I don't even know what that means other than I know a bit generically about the Alexander technique and how it's breathing and posture and things like that. But what does, when you say that you're like a voice and a movement coach, What does that even mean? If I was going to take a lesson from you and like go out there, what would that be like?
Well, so it would be, so I teach this technique that's called somatic voice work. Soma meaning body. So it's a body-based vocal technique created by Jeannie Levetri here in New York. And the thing that's really cool about it is that a lot of the exercises to a certain degree will feel like what you would expect of traditional voice lesson to feel like.
Okay.
You know, we'll do scales, we'll do different things. The one of the goals is definitely for you to get to meet and understand how your voice works. So how it actually functions, not just taking a lesson where it's like, okay, I just want to make myself sound good
or
sound
like this singer. Range or, you
know,
whatever.
We want to actually like help you to increase your range, which means balancing your registers. So, you know, you have like a head register, which is like this. And then we have chest register, which is what you and I talk in, what everybody uses in their speaking voice. So a lot of the work is around balancing your registers so that you can sing high to low without a crack, right? Because a lot of, right, like that's what pretty much everybody complains about. Like, my voice feels tight in the middle, or you feel like you're straining when you're singing along with karaoke, you know?
Yeah.
And so the exercises are pretty simple. I love that about it. They're accessible to pretty much everybody. However, the difference and what makes it not like a traditional voice lesson is that we check in with the body. So it is really therapeutic. I wouldn't say I'm a music therapist, but this process of making sound and then actually pausing afterwards and assessing and seeing, okay, how did that feel in your body?
Yeah.
What did you notice? And that's part of how students start to learn how their voice works and what they're doing that's actually causing strain. And that's where the Alexander technique also comes in, because a lot of the times Alexander technique, we're learning how to observe our own habits and like where we're holding tension.
Path of least resistance and things like that. Yeah.
Yep.
You should check out, there's a music therapist who's done a ton of work on vocal psychotherapy. Her name's Diane Austin. Yeah, I think you would resonate a lot with that
I'm
stuff.
I'm putting her name down. Yeah. I always love to find other folks who are just doing interesting, innovative stuff with the voice. Yeah.
I think, I mean, it's just, as you're well aware, it's just so intimately connected to you and vulnerable. And you talk a lot about that on your, like your blog posts and things like that, about like getting over that fear and being vulnerable, because it's like, you know, like even for me today, pollen's pretty high.
Yes.
So it's like, it's so susceptible to everything.
Yes.
Whereas my guitar, if I can generally move my fingers around, it's going to be close.
Right?
Even if I'm having an off day, I can still pull it off quite a bit more. But there is this inherent, like fine-tuned machine, you know, it'd be the difference between a truck that, you know, always does its thing and is okay if it gets dirty, and like a Formula One race car, you know?
Yes. So. Yes, exactly. And I love watching, one of my favorite things is actually over the years, many of my bandmates, I've watched them go from being instrumentalists to actually being instrumentalists who also want to sing, and watching them transition to singing and suddenly being like, oh my God, my voice feels, you know, like you're saying, oh my God, I'm stuffed up, or I need to drink some water, or no, I can't have any alcohol. And it's like, yeah, now you know why I act the way I act.
So it finicky.
Is really, it's very sensitive. And then just like you're saying, it's sensitive to like outside influences like pollen and what you eat and drink and how, whether you got sleep or not. But then it's sensitive in that it is kind of one of the more vulnerable ways that we can express ourselves, and so human, right? So primal. Like when you hear a human voice, everyone attunes to it for a minute, right?
Yep.
At least
to
see what's going on there, you know?
So for someone who's coming at it from the back door, like you're saying, you know, like an instrumentalist who's sneaking in, what are some of those first conversations and those tips? That whether it's, I don't know, even just philosophy wise, what do you talk about first to set them up for success and moving in the right way?
Yeah, that's a great question. I love working with instrumentalists because it's just like fun to watch them open up in this new way. One of the things that I like to say that I'm a big believer in is a regular practice. So, you know, like you were saying, what's something that
nobody's favorite thing?
I know. And it's like having a regular practice of doing vocal warm-ups will really get you what you want in terms of range and hitting those notes and hitting the high notes and hitting the lows and getting the different colors and textures that you want with your voice. I mentioned, I was in a band when I was younger, and, you know, definitely when I was in high school, I was not one who wanted to practice any warm-ups. And now I'm like, oh, but I see how it would have helped a lot, you know?
Some things you only get with wisdom.
Totally. And it's like, so my approach back then, and I think a lot of people's approach is sing the song over and over and I'll get better. Okay. You will get better, but like that section that just, you can't nail that note in that bridge or, you know, or like the chorus, is not going to come from singing the song over and over. You actually need to warm up. And it's like, you know, like if you think of a runner, it's like you don't just start like sprinting. You have to like stretch. Yeah. You have to do a slow jog and then you might build up, right?
Yeah.
So I think of singing, and that's why I think movement really accompanies and supports it so well. Because again, it's like your body is the instrument and there's so many similarities to how we treat the body for movement and how we treat the voice for singing.
So you were telling me, I'm assuming a lot of this stuff is going into it before we started chatting, that you're working on a book. So
yes!
Tell me, like, yeah, that's nuts. First of all, good for you. But what is it? Give us a sneak preview of that. What's going on in there?
So I started this last year during the pandemic. It was like, I just was writing things and sharing things online. And I was like, people were really digging it. And I was also digging it. I was like, feeling like really connected to what I'm saying.
Nice. It's a good place to be. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like just really like, this is true. You know, this is true. It's true for me, you know, and I believe in this. And so I just started writing this book, and it's about the voice and the ways that our voice shows up in our lives from the time that we're young all the way as we're aging, and the power that you can find in your voice. Whether it's for your, like, whether it's your artistic voice and just finding that, you know, a lot of people who come to me for voice lessons, one of the most common things that kind of like almost everybody says is, I really want to find my voice. I really want to find my sound. I really want to know what I can do. And so that, I think, you know, just hearing that so much made me reflect a lot on my own life and what's allowed me to continue to have a certain amount, a great deal of flexibility and fluidity in connecting to improvisation, to letting myself make all kinds of sounds, and to writing songs. And my husband has really been a good reflection of that, because like he didn't grow up with two parents that were artists in downtown New York. So he's always like, you know, there are things that are really natural to you that are like hard and like require steps for other people. And I'm like, really? Like, you don't just do that? You know, like, you don't just like make weird sounds. Like, so.
And especially outside of New York.
Exactly. So, right. You know what I mean? But it's like, and people think like, oh, I'm not a singer. And I'm like, but you are. Mm. And I know everybody says that, but we really, you know, for most humans can make sound unless you are deaf and like have, you know, something where you literally have like something anatomically where you can't, and even deaf people can sing too, right? Can make sound and create vibration.
Correct.
And so I just think a lot of times we've just put singing and music into this box.
That's
and
good.
Like we don't realize that it's, so sometimes I like to say, well, think of it of like sounding, right? And playing with sound. And once I often teach these kinds of workshops where people are exploring voice and movement, so many people are like, oh my God, this is so fun, you know? But there's something about sing this song that sometimes people get like, ooh, it feels very restrictive.
Yeah, yeah.
And suddenly I have to sound exactly like Barbara Streisand, Whitney Houston, Beyonce, whoever, fill in the blank.
Yeah.
You know, and that's intimidating, you know?
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
When it's, I think, I mean, 1,000 years from now, I feel like books are going to look back and think, or, you know, whatever people are reading things on in 1,000 years are going to look back and say like, man, there was this really weird period of time where music became super professional.
Right.
Because for most of human history, it has not been a overly professional endeavor.
Yes.
And even still in most of the world.
Yes.
But, the reach of the music industry is sprawling. So most of the world gets covered more and more every day. But I think it's interesting because it's like, even just getting out of a Western context, it's like, making music, you grow up and you just do it. And there are so many cultures where the word music and dance are the same word and things like that. So
same word, and maybe even there isn't a word, because it's like, life or something.
What do you mean?
Like a separate thing. So. And that's kind of what I'm really interested in, for those that are interested in just opening up and that possibility for folks to, one, see that like they have songs in them, and that a lot of, I believe, your songs really come from your own personal story.
Nice.
So that's why I wanted to share my own story and my life growing up, because that's where I've drawn material from, and people sometimes think, oh, like I'm not whatever Billie Eilish or whatever. It's like, whatever, Billie Eilish is just a person. She's just a girl
who also doesn't think I'm so-and-so. There's somebody else that she doesn't.
Exactly.
I'm no whatever. Yeah.
I'm no whatever. So it's just like that thing that happened in your day, and like that relationship with your fill-in-the-blank family member, partner, that day at work. Like that's the stuff that music is made out of.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think, that's another super special thing. And I think that's still my pushback to the classical music kind of hierarchy, is like the importance of folk music and the importance of even just pop music.
Yes, like I'm with you.
Modern folk music, if you will.
Yes.
Because it's just the human experience. And classical music is that too. It just got elevated somewhere along the way.
Separated and then
and the academic. But it's still
that.
If you went back, there would be less of that than I think we think. Mm-hmm.
Totally with you. Good. Yeah, I love the folk piece. To me is like definitely a lot of my inspiration. How can I connect sometimes, an elaborate, or more intricate concept, but I still want it to be like of the people. Like I just want it to be something that's really accessible. I'm always interested in that. Like in my writing, in my teaching, in my music, I'm always like, how can this be really accessible and not just for like musicians to understand?
Sure.
You know what I mean?
I think that's good.
So I love pop music for that too. I'm like, I love pop music for just like, look, this is speaking to like a lot of folks. Why?
Something's got to be special about that. Yeah. Something.
Yeah.
I grew up being like, I don't know, just contrary. So, anything that was too popular, I was always, like a hipster about or whatever. And so like growing up, I was like, you always talk about your favorite bands in high school and the best bands ever, like it's a competition. And just like being very like, oh, the Beatles are not, the greatest thing ever. And like looking back, it's like, I couldn't care less who's the best band ever. But looking back, it's like, wow, a lot of special things really did happen in a short amount of time with those random four dudes. Like,
I know.
And it's just interesting to see the like, you're not going to get that again. You'll get different things. But it's just special. Yeah.
Well, and music is so cool because of what you're saying too, of like how it tells history.
Yeah.
And I guess, I think, it's like you think about just like in talking about folk music and, from music around the world, if we're looking at like lots of different groups throughout Africa, just that idea of like the griot or storyteller who's like the keeper of the story.
History and song and tradition.
Right. And so I think that we sometimes forget that just because of what you're saying, like the way that we've kind of created this hierarchy, and it's like, what if this is a means of telling our stories, you know? And that's really become more and more central to the way that I'm interested in working.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Good. You know,
that is good. Well, I feel like we could probably riff on that all day.
I could tell too.
Yeah. So what, at some point I have to just cut myself off. So what does this like book project, are you on any timeline for it where you're hoping to get it out? Or are you letting it do its natural thing, or what are you hoping for
that? In my dream of dreams, I would love that I could release it, you know, like fall of 2022.
Okay, good.
You know, I'm hoping to have it the first full thing done at the end of this year. I already have an editor, you know, and then I'll be looking for a publisher. So any people who are interested in publishing, you know, any publishers, any cool publishers,
show
you know,
notes. Links exactly, in the show notes.
Exactly. And then, you know, I definitely see that it will have some kind of ripple effect into a related accompanying music project as
very
well.
Cool.
Yeah. And that naturally release. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's naturally. Like, I wasn't even trying, but you know, it makes sense when I say it to everybody and even myself, but I really was like, I'm just writing a book. But of course, you know, this happened with my last album.
The wheels gotta get spinning, you know.
It just like, it starts to create other things. And I'm like, okay, I guess we're going to have some songs as well.
That's good.
So, good. I'm really excited. I'm hoping next year or close to that, I'll be releasing the book.
So what other things do you want people to be looking out for, watching out for, or reaching out to you for?
Well, I would love, if you're interested in anything I'm talking about, come on over to my website, pyengnyc.com. This year, I'm really in the process of transitioning some of the ways that I work. So I'm hoping to launch my first online program for folks folks all over the world who are interested in kind of what I'm talking about in terms of having some little practice, like you were talking about, for their voice. And you don't have to be a singer. This is for folks who just want to like, what would it be like if I could maybe sing a little louder, or make some other sounds, or sing a little higher, broaden my range.
Yeah.
So I'm
obviously, so exactly. Many transitions to, or transfers of like, even in a professional environment, just the confidence and control over your voice, even if you're not using it as a air quote vocalist. Yeah.
100%. Yeah. So helpful for presentations. So helpful for being on Zoom. So helpful for creating your videos that go on your website and like your social media. Really helpful.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to be starting a new thing, which is I'm going to be launching a group program for folks, primarily women, non-binary folks, who are interested in creating their own original music piece.
Very cool.
Whether it's an EP or full-length album or concert. And so I'm going to be doing a program geared at that, really generating it, again, what I'm talking about, from your own personal story, and giving you the support and tools to hone your voice, but also to hone your own music.
Good. In a group format or individuals?
And that'll be in a group format, and it'll be virtual. There may be some aspects in person, but after this past year, I've really seen the beauty of groups online and how supportive it works. I'm even in a writing group myself, and it's been great.
Still, as much as I'm 1,000% ready to do everything, walking downstairs is still super nice. That commute is pretty great.
I know. And it's like, just like, you know, and also we're both musicians. It's like nothing will ever, ever replace live in-person music, right? We know that that has a magic unto its own. But, you know, you can actually get a lot of what we're talking about. There's a lot that you can accomplish in your own music goals, your own voice goals. through all these like amazing this technology that we've got now.
Very cool. Yeah. Well, so we'll have all the links to your stuff. Any other things you want, any other places you want people to find you, or is website a good first step?
Website's first step. I would say please join the newsletter. I put out usually a monthly blog, and you can see that online as well. All things related to hair, like my last album, hair and music and finding your voice and putting yourself out there and the power of your voice. So there's a lot of that on the website. And yeah, and then I'm also on Instagram and Facebook, Pieng Threadgill. But good. I would say go to pyingnyc.com and you can find all the links.
Cool. And we'll have all that stuff linked in the show notes here. So lastly, to round all this out, why do you think it's important to encourage people to make more music?
Well, I'll
Two hours later.
I know, exactly. No, you know, it's like, I mean, that one I could talk about for 2 hours. I mean, that's exactly why I'm writing my book, honestly. Because I think music is the best. But seriously, I think what it does for us as human beings is wonderful. It calms our nervous systems. It quiets our minds. It allows you a way in for self-reflection, introspection. It allows us to connect to one another and cut through the bullshit,
yeah,
right? And actually feel one another and create something original. It allows us to say those emotional things that you really can't fully articulate. I think music and movement allow us, there's a reason that they're often joined in cultures, right? Yeah. And they allow us to articulate the pain and the joy of being human. And we need that. When we don't have that, crazy shit happens. So we need that, you know, to get through this life. And that's a reason why I think it's, you know, it's woven into the cultures, the fabric of so many cultures, because it's just like, we need this at the end of the day to just have this time to like express ourselves, you know?
So good.
Yeah.
Well, awesome chat. You've got all kinds of cool things going on. Keep an eye out for that book. Well, any last things you need to get off your chest? You feel good?
I feel great. I'm just, thank you so much for having me. It's always so great to like talk to another like music mind.
This is good. This has been a great chat. I appreciate you.
Yeah, likewise. And so glad about your podcast. I hope it continues to just like expand. I love what you're doing.
Thank you. We're getting there. It's doing great. Trucking along. So it's good. Well, for Pieng and for Chris, remember everybody, give more grace, share more love, and make more music.
Woohoo!
All right. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And as always, if you enjoyed and want to learn more about the guests, their info is in the show notes, as well as how you can support the show. And the best way is to leave a rating and review and tell a friend. Anything else, if you want to make a donation, buy some merch, follow us on Instagram, get in touch with me, you can all do that through the links in the show notes. But until next time, give more grace, share more love, and make more music.